This is Climate Justice, Y'all, a podcast dedicated to lifting up and centering the climate and environmental justice movement in the South. Despite the South being the most biodiverse, diverse, and one of the largest economic engines in the world, we are underfunded and often barred from the decision-making table. Because of that, we decided to pull up a chair and amplify the stories of communities in the South hit the hardest by the climate crisis.
We're using good old-fashioned storytelling to shine a light on the Southern leaders from all walks of life, putting in their blood, sweat, and their tears to transform the region. The usage of y'all in the title is on purpose. We are honoring our Southern heritage of creativity, resilience, and ingenuity. Welcome to Climate Justice, y'all. It's real, it's here, and it's about time. You guys listen to stories like Nina Morgan.
Nina, could you tell us about yourself?
Yeah. So I guess to work my way backwards to now, I'm born and raised in Alabama. Grew up in Walker County, which is the county that's kind of north of Jefferson, where Birmingham is located. And I grew up in a really small town in a county called Tipsy. I think it's Cherokee, actually, for poplar tree. But it's like a old mining town, you know, mining camp that was founded by the Bartlebine Coal Company in the early 1900s. And so that's kind of, where I grew up, in just small rural part of the state, in central, north central Alabama. And I have a lot of, you know, just memories of playing outside and, you know, jumping and running. And it was like a really small town where everybody knew everybody. It was a front line, much like, you know, communities in North Birmingham. It was a community impacted by industrial pollution. So Tipsy is located less than a mile away from a surface coal mine, the Burton Bend mine, that's owned by McWane. I have memories of how it impacted people, how it impacted me and my family, feeling just the surface blast shake the foundation of the house, seeing like the roof paneling fall off because of that. People in the area, I remember overhearing conversations with my mom and her friends and like neighbors talking about how it's not safe to drink the water, and, you know, remember to buy bottled water from the grocery store. That was always something that me and my brother hated, is like toting like big cases of water in the house because like we didn't want to drink the tap water because of the mining and industry and the way that we felt it impacted the water, our water sources. And so, it's interesting because like sometimes when industrial like land lays fallow for a while, nature begins to kind of reclaim it. And what was once like this barren, like kind of hellscape of a place becomes like green again. And so like there's a time where the Burton Bend mine was not like there was like part of it that wasn't like they weren't operating part of it, and they had let like nature kind of like claim it. I think that was in the 80s or 90s. And so by the time me and my brother came along and were old enough to kind of go out on our own, we used to go back there with the other kids in the neighborhood and like, you know, play in the woods. And like, you know, I remember people used to, the kind of coal beds that they had blasted out, they seal it with water and threw fish in there. And so people used to go fishing back there.
Oh.
And everything. So it's like one of those things now, it's like really interesting going back. Like there's this graveyard that's at the very back of the community, and there's like a little path that leads to the what we once used to play at. Now you go back there, everything's clear. Everything's like, you know, you can tell like it's like a piece of land that's like part of the mine, and like it's operating, trucks drive through there and stuff. There's like a road, a gravel road, but you know, it wasn't like that when I was coming up. And so it's interesting just like what my mindset was about the area when I was a kid versus now. And so anyway, but fast forward, you know, I went to Dora High School, which is right down the street from the Alabama Mining Museum. And that kind of highlights, you know, how big coal is in the county. They call Walker County Coal County. And once I graduated from Dora High School, I went on to the University of Alabama at Birmingham and majored in sociology. I got my BA in both sociology and anthropology. And so, spent some time as a student working as an intern with the University Sustainability Division, and then went to work as an urban. After I graduated, I worked for the summer as an urban conservation intern with the Nature Conservancy. Did some time through AmeriCorps Vista with the City of Birmingham and their Department of Planning, Engineering, and Permits. And landed a job at GAF. I had been kind of volunteering with GAF, and GAF stands for the Greater Birmingham Alliance to Stop Pollution. And so I had started volunteering with GAF while I was, doing a lot of community work at that time, and just kind of stuck with it and moved up to their junior board. And eventually when they an organizing position opened up, I applied for it and got offered the job. So I've been working for GAF as a climate and environmental justice organizer now for about 2 years at this point. It'll be, I think, 2 years in August. So it's been a great opportunity. It's been a great learning experience. I've learned more about, you know, my home, the state, through this job, and also about Birmingham, the history of Birmingham, and learned a lot about the experiences of folks in North Birmingham, that are impacted by polluting, major sources of industrial pollution in the area. And so GAF is all about really, you know, advancing clean air and environmental justice in the greater Birmingham area. Through education, advocacy, and collaboration, that's our mission, and that's kind of what we stand for. And so, it's really great to get an opportunity to do this work.
So, Nina, first of all, your story is amazing. And what's funny, listeners, is that I met Nina several years ago because we both worked at the UAB Sustainability Office. And Nina, I didn't know we had so much in common. You telling your story about growing up in the rural like area where, you know, there's nothing else to do but play outside, you know, there's no other infrastructure there, and you're playing in this pollution and your family doesn't feel safe because of the pollution. And so I almost feel kind of silly because I was going to ask you, how did you get into the environmental justice fight? But it looks like it was kind of thrown on you and it was brought to your doorstep with a bow on it, you know, and it's... Mm-hmm. It's admirable that you took the gavel and you're like, you know what? Enough is enough. I'm not putting up with this. My family doesn't deserve this. My community doesn't deserve it. And Alabama's a lucky state because it has you fighting for it. And it's really, really great that you're doing it. But I kind of want to shift the focus more about like the work that you're doing now. You mentioned earlier that you are doing like a pop-up market for the 35th Avenue Superfund site. Can you tell us more about the Superfund site? Could you tell us more about what other work GAF does, and why are you like particularly passionate about air pollution? Can you elaborate on all that? I know I just kind of threw a bunch of stuff at you, so if I need to start over, just let me know. But yeah.
So the North Birmingham 35th Avenue Superfund site is made up of three main neighborhoods: Harriman Park, Fairmont, and Collegeville. And the North Birmingham community itself is made up of six neighborhoods, but these are the kind of the three main ones that are part of the Superfund site. And so, a lot of a lot of like the coming to be of the this area and the Superfund designation happened between like 2009 and 2014. So GASP, kind of like at the very founding of the organization, which was 2009, was when GASP kind of was founded. You know, Kirsten Bryant, who's our deputy director, and some other folks came together and started to get more involved, you know, in North Birmingham. The EPA at the time was doing hazardous air pollutant tests and nationally at schools. And so one of the schools that was tested was Hudson Elementary School, the old Hudson Elementary School, which is located in the Collegeville neighborhood. And they found you know, excess levels of different pollutants and stuff in the soil.
In an elementary
and
school?
So that, yeah, yeah, in an elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's K through I think Hudson is K through 8. And so after they found like the pollutants, they started to do a deeper investigation, and really all of that led to you know, this understanding that both the air and the pollutants in the soil were not—they were all at this like high end of what's acceptable, according to the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA. You know, it exceeded the normal level of air toxics. And so, after like all of these samples were collected around the community, you know, between 2005, 2012, up to 2014, the soil sampling was happening at Hudson K through 8, and then the air sampling continued. There in 2011, you know, GASP was following this the whole time. So a lot of people don't know this, but before GASP even started taking action and being super involved, Kirsten and others sat in meetings, and all of these meetings that the community was having with the EPA for years. I think for like almost, I think maybe 2 years, 3 years. And it wasn't until like relationships were developed and more was learned that GASP actually stepped in and started to take action. So in 2011, the CBS 42 aired Deadly Deception, and it was about an hour-long investigative report basically exposing the public health crisis in North Birmingham and in the three communities. And that kind of blew the top off. I mean, it prompted more EPA testing. It visibilized the problem, the cry for help that residents were really vocalizing. And so they used authorities under the Superfund program, which basically is a federal law. It's part of a federal law to assess properties and communities for soil and water pollution, and then try to fund like emergency cleanup. And Superfund is actually a program that's drastically underfunded. I mean, it's a crying shame. But that is kind of what led to this whole testing and investigative project. And this uncovering of hazardous pollutants like lead and arsenic and PAHs, polyaromatic hydrocarbons, that's what led to the area becoming known as the 35th Avenue site, the 35th Avenue Superfund site. And so in 2013, the EPA identified five potentially responsible parties. They're known as PRPs. In the program, and those parties were Allegasco, which is now Spire Gas, KMAC Services, U.S. Pipe, Walter Cope, which is now ERP, and then they went bankrupt, and now it's Bluestone Cope, which is owned by Jim Justice of West Virginia, and Drummond Company. who owns ABC Coke. So those were the five: Alagasco, K-Mac Services, U.S. Pipe, Walter Coke, and Drummond Company. And I could talk a lot more about kind of like the story of the Superfund site, but long story short, gas has been working in the area, you know, for years, you know, for more than 10 years, trying to right these wrongs and address, work with residents to address the issue of the toxic pollution and contamination in the area. And so we work really closely with Mr. Charlie Powell, who is the president and founder of People Against Neighborhood Industrial Contamination, or PANIC is what it's called. And it's a grassroots kind of community-driven group made up of people who have either lived in the community or still live in the community that are working to advocate for relocation of folks who live there but want to move, would like to get away from the contamination and want to kind of be bought out. And or compensation, you know, compensation for those who want to stay, compensation for those who have had to deal with this pollution and contamination for years and years. And like I said before, we use the areas of advocacy, education, and collaboration to kind of like actually manifest our mission. And so we have different buckets of work. We have our clean air effort. We have our community science efforts, where we actually monitor, work with people, residents, to monitor the levels of pollution in the area, and really skill people up, train people up, and empower folks to report the pollution that they see or smell to the Jefferson County Health Department. We also work a lot with storytelling, really, you know, trying to work with media and residents, empowering folks to tell the story, to put faces to this issue and really visibilize this issue of air pollution in our city. A lot of times people don't think about the air as an environmental justice issue because it's so, like, you know, it's not tangible, it's not soil, it's not water, it's kind of, you know, we take it for granted. You can't always see it, but just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not an issue. And you can certainly see it in the North Birmingham Superfund site. So we also have a legal arm. We have a staff attorney, and she every year writes comments on the ambient air plan every year that the Jefferson County Department of Health Air Division has to update and submit their ambient air plan. And so GAF started submitting like formal comments to make the air ambient air plan stronger. And also our staff attorney works to submit comments on major sources of air pollution Title V operating permits. And so we do a lot of advocacy around that, around really mobilizing people to submit their own comments in the community and attend public hearings on it. That's part of the Title V permitting process. So that's just kind of like a little snapshot of our work. Like I said, we're small. We're a very small organization. There's me, and then we have, I think, five other people that's working with us. So, I mean, we're kind of like a six-person organization. But we are taking on really big industries, big problems. We also do some work in South Alabama and the Gulf, in Mobile, on the coast, in Africatown, where you have people much like North Birmingham who are dealing with a lot of industries. In concentrated areas, there's a lot of petrochemical plants there that people are having to deal with. And so, and we also work to advocate for solar, you know, because we understand that clean energy is really what we should be moving towards. The reason that you have, you know, this issue of environmental injustice is because we have an extractive economy. We have an economy that's based on fossil fuel, and the folks who, some people who are the most marginalized, you know, Black and brown communities, working class communities, impoverished communities, are kind of the folks who are dealing with some of the most harmful and hazardous impacts of these fossil fuel-based industries, like coke plants, like petrol chemicals, and so on and so forth. And so that's why we advocate for clean energy, you know, because we understand that, you know, that's kind of the direction that we need to be going to, clean energy that doesn't harm our people and our planet. And so we do a lot in terms of holding the Public Service Commission accountable and Alabama Power and Southern Company accountable for their rate for solar power. And I could talk more about that. But yeah, I feel like I've been talking a lot. But that's a snapshot of kind of the work that gas does.
Well, Nina, you're supposed to talk a lot. It's stories like dolls. Yeah, I mean, seriously, like it's stories like dolls. That's the reason why we have this show. I mean, this is a David and Goliath situation. And listeners, despite this being such a small staff, they are doing amazing work.
Tremendous work.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And if anything, I think a lot of the big guys that are running this whole thing are a little afraid of them, as they should be, because y'all are mobilizing people and y'all are uplifting people too while you're doing it. And it's just awesome.
I remember when I first started out like 3 years ago, and my first job, I guess you could say, was surveying North Birmingham. And I heard of the work that GAS did in conjunction with Panic and Mr. Powell. And it was just crazy. We were at a community meeting, and that was the first time I heard of all the pollutants and the actual names of some of the airborne pollutants that they were creating. And GAS was the one who was hosting the meeting. And you don't normally hear this about Birmingham. This is like, that was one of my first times here. Like, you hear the crime rates, you hear all of those things, but you don't hear about the actual suffering that these people go through because of these big corporate jobs that are creating all of this pollutants for these people and causing them to be sick for generations. Like, it was just crazy hearing their stories. It was, thank you. That's all I can say is thank you for what you guys do.
Yeah. So, and sorry, you go ahead.
No, you're fine.
Well, I was just going to say, like, the work that GASP does, and Nina, of course, you can talk more and stuff. Y'all are adding language to issues that people are already know and experiencing. You're giving people the language to explain what's happening. They already know what's happening. Like you said earlier about like you growing up and, you know, the water, nobody trusts the water. You know, right. That's an emotional thing. And then a scientist comes in, or, you know, a nonprofit that's doing awesome work, and it's like, hey, there's a reason why the water's nasty. Here's the reason. Yeah. But anyway, Nina.
Yeah. I mean, thank you, first of all, for saying that. It's just like those kinds of comments, honestly, can like keep me going for weeks and months. So thank you. And they are problems that people are already experiencing. You know, we know that fossil fuel, we know coal, we know carbon emissions contributes to, it's like the major contributor to climate change. And we know that people are already being impacted by that. You know, the impact is seen in communities like North Birmingham 35th Avenue Superfund site. We can feel it just in the city of Birmingham. It's getting hotter. We're dealing with the urban heat island effect where, you know, there's just this large amount of solar radiation coming up that people are having to deal with because of the amount of impervious space that's taking up our city versus the actual vegetation and trees that are providing coverage and, you know, yeah, just cover from the sun. You know, we have stormwater issues. We're getting more and more rain every year. You know, in these torrential rains and these short time spans, but just more and more inches. And it's overwhelming our stormwater infrastructure here. So in addition to people being impacted by air pollution in the North Birmingham area, you know, areas like Collegeville especially, but also Harriman Park are dealing with, they're located in floodplains. And so there has been FEMA buyouts of folks who are located in floodplains in the area, but, you know, it's not enough. People are still dealing with having to, you know, jump over their steps, you know, when it rains, because like there's like just this little small pond around their yard. What does that mean for elderly people who aren't able to do that? You're just stuck in the house because, you know, you can't get outside because there's water everywhere. You know, that causes mold. That really negatively impacts the infrastructure to homes. It makes your house more, moldy and you have to breathe that stuff in. And so all of it is connected. And again, you know, some of the most underserved, you know, marginalized communities are having to deal with it. You know, it's climate change is a threat multiplier, right? So when in situations where things are already hard, climate change makes it that much harder. And so that's really, you know, where gas is. I didn't mention this at, to answer your last question, but that's one of the things too. Gas is working on the Birmingham for a Green New Deal campaign, where we're really trying to develop a policy platform, you know, for really nitty gritty, what Green New Deal related policies that provide, you know, good paying, you know, livable, safe jobs that impact some of the problems that have been named on this show. You know, in Birmingham, how what are some specific policies now that the city can start to implement? And we're in it's a bottom up process. We're getting impact from the very people that are most impacted to help kind of inform the development of the policy platform. And we're kind of like mirroring this, like, off of, you know, the regional work that people like y'all are doing with Southern Communities for a Green New Deal, with SIN, and with the Gulf South for a Green New Deal, with the GCCLP, and the Gulf Coast Center for Law and Policy. So it's a lot of work, but it's well worth it, because if we don't act now, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse.
Right. So, Nina, you've been fighting this fight for a good minute, 3+ years, at least that we know. What hope do you have to keep going, to keep fighting this fight?
I have lots of hope. I have lots of hope. I think for me, what gives me the most hope is seeing people start to care more, you know, meeting new people, you know, and really developing deep relationships with folks who are, you know, right on the front lines of this environmental justice and climate justice fight. You know, it's hard, but a lot of times I'm fed, spiritually fed and fortified by talking to folks like Keisha Brown or Mr. Charlie Powell with Panic, and you know, meeting new young people from the community that want to get involved in the work that GAS does. You know, getting words of encouragement and like a pat on the back. Sometimes, like at the end of the day, just like getting words of encouragement from the communities that you serve. You know, add a girl, you know, a pat on the back, a good job, like a nice word to let you know that the work that you're doing is worth it and appreciated literally can keep me going for months and give me hope. And also just things that I've been seeing about racial justice with the protests last year, it gives me hope to see like the types of conversations about the fact that we live in this world where folks who contribute the least to big problems like climate change, like police violence, like poverty are being impacted the most by the problem. But the fact that that conversation is now being pushed more and more, that the federal government has to respond to it, gives me hope. And a lot of that activism and that work and those protests that we saw last summer are being led by young people, because at the end of the day, young people are the ones, millennials, the Gen Z, we're the ones. This is the kind of like the big problem. These are the big problems of our generation. And so seeing young people say no more, that's it. Something's got to change. Like, y'all have to get your act together because we have to inherit this mess. That gives me a lot of hope, too. You know, seeing the major victory at Standing Rock, you know, that's historic. That's a huge deal. That gives me hope. Seeing, you know, activists in Cancer Alley, you know, with Rise St. James get offered the Nobel Peace Prizes gives me hope, because it more and more people cannot look away from this issue. People cannot look away from this issue of environmental justice, this issue of people being poisoned, people fighting for their sacred lands, people fighting for the right to breathe clean air and drink clean water, which is like a basic human right. That's a basic human right. We all need it. We all need clean water. We all need clean air. We all need, you know, quality housing. You know, we all need community safety. Those are basic human rights. And seeing the conversation be pushed in this direction more and more definitely gives me hope.
Yes, ma'am, Nina. That makes me want to go to battle. You're preaching.
And I'll say, too, that also, like, Mother Nature gives me hope. Mm-hmm. Like, nature is so resilient and just, like... Yeah, nature just keeps going. Like, no matter what people do, you know, like, squirrels are going to be disrespectful. The grass is going to grow. Like, you know, the deer are going to jump out. Like, the fact that, like, we're all connected and we all get to experience nature, which just keeps going, no matter, like, trees growing, you know, like, just years and years and years, like, just no matter what happens, like, people running around the street, like, Facebook fights breaking out, but, like, the trees continue to grow and, like, mm-hmm. convert energy from the sun into food. And, like, yes. that kind of just, that constantness gives me hope, too. So sometimes when I feel overwhelmed, there's a lot going on, I just, like, go and take a hike, go into nature and kind of just lose myself in nature and, you know, come out of it feeling a lot better, because at the end of the day, like, the planet is going to do what the planet does. It's really people that have to figure out how to live in harmony with the planet, not the other way around.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Reverend Michael Malcolm. I am the founder and executive director of the People's Justice Council, as well as executive director of Alabama Interfaith Power and Light. Our mission at the People's Justice Council is to engage and equip communities with tools and access to build power from the grassroots up for change at the policy level. We do this through education and advocacy. Listen, we'd love for you to be a part of the people who are the People's Justice Council.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Climate Justice Y'all podcast. My name is Michael Hansen, and I'm the executive director of a small nonprofit organization called GASP in Birmingham, Alabama. We're one of the four organizations who came together to produce this podcast. The other groups are the Southeast Climate and Energy Network, the Gulf Coast Center for Law and Policy, and the People's Justice Council. We're centering the stories of the people and places on the front lines of the climate crisis and environmental justice movements in the South. We'll be talking about air, energy, land, labor, democracy, and all kinds of other issues affecting Southern communities. Funding for this podcast was provided in part by the U.S. Climate Action Network. If you'd like to see this work continue, please consider making a donation on our website. If your organization or company would like to sponsor an episode, please get in touch with us by emailing me at michael@gaspgroup.org. That's Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, at G-A-S-P-G-R-O-U-P.org. Thanks again for listening and being a part of this story.